Hey guys, Shane here. I'm just going to preface this one. Of course, CrowPod contains language and themes which may not be suitable for anybody. This episode in particular, because apparently, once again, we need to go back and deal with the Glenn Kamara being racially abused at work problem again. I'm not sure everything that's going on in these interviews here with the Rangers Review, or if there's some on Heart and Hand or whatever, or this Tomas, the Czech footy account. What I've seen from the clips that they use as a teaser, it's pretty disappointing to hear. You know, he doesn't want to make a political statement. I don't think saying racism is bad as a political statement, that people shouldn't be racially abused just for going to work like Glenn Kamara was. Again, I had to wait and hear the full interviews with this guy. I'm just going off of the clips that we've heard here already. Obviously, this is going to be an issue. But the few days building up to this match again, and again, cannot stress this enough, right? You know, he's there in this teaser talking about political correctness and the way that we responded, the way Kamara responded. Again, responded to what? Being racially abused at work. That's it. This is not a fucking hard, complex issue. At that core, that's all it fucking is. Glenn Kamara went to work and was racially abused for it, and your fans continue, you know, again, even him in this interview, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. English is a second language. Still, it's really not that fucking hard to say that was awful. The way that the fans in the Czech Republic responded was awful. The way that the club responded was awful. And somehow, it's a bit of a laugh that Rangers are now universally hated. And again, why? Please say why. And Derek, you know, Derek Clark, I don't want to hang you out on a hook here, bud. I know you haven't done all the interviews I have, but fucking cut that off and don't let him say this kind of shit. You know, it's... Oh. So, what I've done, because obviously it's still important, it's something that, you know, we're going to have to deal with here over the next few days. Let's go back. Because in March of 2021, when all this was going on, I had a lengthy discussion with our good friend Gordon Watson down there in Oceania. Good journalist. I think a lot of you guys are going to know him, obviously, from Twitter or in person. He's worked pretty much everywhere in football at this point, hasn't he? But a lengthy discussion about racism in sport, and the response from Rangers at the time, the response that we saw from Czech fans and the clubs, which again, I mean, something's going to happen this week. You know, I mean, if this is the attitude of one of their good supporters, or one of the ones who kind of gets it, but again, still doesn't, because it's not a political statement to say Glenn Kamara was racially abused, and that's why the jackass fans here hate your club. That's all it is. There's nothing else to it than that. You don't need to parse it out. It's just that fucking simple. So here's my conversation, again, fairly lengthy, with Gordon Watson, but sadly, something, here we are 2.5 years later, just as relevant. Just as relevant now as it was then. So some bonus CrowPod Revisited content for you here today, and we'll talk to y'all soon. Thanks, guys.
I was born by the river, been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
All right, welcome into a special edition of the Crow Pod, and joining me, Sunday still for me, but Monday for him is our good friend down in New Zealand, Mr. Gordon Glenn Watson. Hello.
Shane, hi. Hi, everyone.
See, you know, after 10 years, look at, we actually talk to each other instead of just doing the Twitter thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so far that Number Wang can take us.
Damn it. I wanted to get the first Number Wang reference. I think everybody knows Gordon on Twitter. What, @Gordon_Watson. If you live down there, of course, you might know him from the television, where, you know, I always did my work in print. You're one of those fancy fuckers that looks good behind the camera.
Oh, I use print as my stepping stone, I have to confess. That's my preference. I'm not fond of getting in front of the camera, but, you know, I just love football, and it's been kind to me in that regard.
Yeah, I was always the, you know, they call me to do like TV segments, and I was like, have you heard how I speak, right? Like, I hope you got the censor button ready, man. You got that eight second drop ready to go.
yeah, it's a real thing.
So me and Gordon, you know, we kind of powwowed and talked, and we decided we'd get on and talk about some of the stuff that's transpired from Thursday on. Just from, you know, our unique, I don't know, perspectives as journalists. So you don't have to listen to people like Keith Jackson or Graham Spears tell you what to think. which, why the fuck would you? So just a quick rehash. Of course, everybody knows, but in the closing moments of, you know, a dead tie Thursday, Glenn Kamara, very clearly, I mean, we all saw it on the pitch. I mean, nobody covers their mouth the way Andrej Kudela did to say, hey, you're a guy. I believe Kamara said specifically now in his statement, what he told him was, you're a fucking monkey. You know you are. Kamara went straight to the touchline. Zungu was trying to tell the fourth official. Connor Goldson finally figured out what had been said, and then immediately went to rip the throat out of the motherfucker who did it. The match was, of course, finished. Kamara said, you know, I think via staff and some other people sense that the thought of walking off wasn't there. He just wanted to carry on with doing his job. And thankfully, the team, from what I can tell, led by Goldson and McGregor, figured out a way to kind of kettle Slavia in the side door of the West enclosure after they locked the door in the tunnel, so that they could make their feelings known. I think is the nice way of saying it. Slavia have apparently filed 28 police reports with 19 different jurisdictions since the Czech ambassador. I don't even know what the fuck that was. It was just like, I mean, if you've read any of their statements since then, and of course, we'll get into this further. I mean, this is a club that has openly defended blatant racist chanting from their fans before. So I don't think their response has come as a shock at all. This is kind of what you expect out of them.
Yeah, look, for me, and we talked about this on Twitter, the sophistication was paradoxically sophisticated and knuckleheaded. And their approach to their communications was just to hammer social media, their website, with a multitude of disinformation, confusing messages, deliberately so, to muddy the waters and make any investigation that's undertaken really difficult to pick apart. But I think the beautiful thing about, if you can say such a word about what happened, is that the Rangers support, as far as I can see right through all of it. And I found the club's response to be amazing to bottom. Support has been amazing as well. It's overwhelming, in fact. I'm not Glenn Kamara, and I can't speak for Glenn Kamara, but if I were he or in his position, I'd feel that love. And he needs it, believe me, really, in that 100%. Situation.
Well, it didn't stop with him. Of course, you know, while the match was still going on, immediately afterward, there was coordinated. We've talked about this as Gordon on Twitter. Coordinated. I mean, there are clearly accounts set up either at the behest of the club or some supporters group, or you know, a lot of us can clearly tell some of the accounts came directly from the club, but immediately set about then, you know, like Kamar Ruth getting all the banana emojis on his Instagram posts. When they got done with him, they moved on to Alfredo. So I mean, it hasn't stopped. And of course, then we had the horribly racist photograph from one of their fan groups, which again, Slavia is. I mean, to quote their press release here, Slavia Prague files criminal complaint against unknown individuals involved in the preparation and publishing of this picture. So what fucking criminal complaint do you get to file?
No.
I mean, it's utter fucking bullshit. And like you said, I mean, it's all just throw everything out there. I mean, this is that perfect, you know, the Russian disinformation kind of stuff that we've seen since, you know, the mid 2010s of just throw every fucking thing that you can out there and try to confuse the hell out of people.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, you're living in a country that's just come through a 5-year period and is perhaps still in maybe you're in a low point for it now that Trump's gone. But you saw close up what that can look like, where on one hand you're getting these messages saying one thing, and then on the other it's a contrary message. And this now is a real tactic, and I think Slavia have doubled down on that position from what we can tell. And even, you know, like I saw James Forrest making a remark about a Czech football account, you know, in positive optimism that there was some feeling in Czech football that this was wrong. But if you look at some of those accounts, you know, they're less than 100 followers, or they're less than 20, or in some cases they have one or two. And that's the insidious nature of not only racism itself, but, you know, the communications tactics that currently exist. And I suppose we'll get onto some of that when we talk about Michael Stewart and what he and what he's coming out with now. But it makes it a very confusing space for everyone, for all of us, you know, not just if you're black, but also for all people who have, you know, good values at heart, you know, who care about their fellow person. And you try to work it out emotionally and cognitively, but it's difficult. Not sometimes, but all the time, it's tiring. Racism is tiring. It's boring. And, you know, it drags you down, which is maybe why, you know, in our game with Parkhead last night, you know, it was a tiring couple of weeks for the club and everyone connected, winning the title, Slavia Prague, Old Firm game, you know, people get knackered. They're only human, you know, it's difficult.
Well, you know, and let's, before we move through all the important stuff, let's thank civil rights hero Scott Brown, who I now put on a level with Mandela walking out of prison, Martin Luther King Jr. walking across the bridge, because he walked across the pitch and shook Glenn Kamara's hand and then made sure he mentioned it in the interview, like there wasn't a fucking camera 3 feet away following you the whole – just fuck off, man. Yeah. But, hey, man of the match, right? Man of the match.
Yeah. Look, I took a different view of it in the moment. For me, I thought, good. That's done now.
Yeah.
It's a powerful image. But, you know, every football team, every opponent has a player that you've come to loathe and despise as the pantomime villain. And he, for me personally, has been that figure. You know, he's lacked humility. He's, you know, lauded it in front of us at games at Ibrox. And for me, I thought, particularly in my sense of fatigue over the matter, I thought, okay, perhaps we needed that and you were big enough to do it. But it was right back to the normal broadcast at the end of the game with the way that he, you know, he reconnected with support.
Well, and how he talked to, you know, what did he say about Morelos? He didn't say his name. It was the guy that got on the end of the ball or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, and that's part of the problem. I think us as a support, like, we've seen this. You know, you brought Michael Stewart, but let's run through the gamut of names in the Scottish media who've carried out this, I mean, openly xenophobic campaign against Morales for years. And then, you know, now we have a touchstone moment like this, and they want to all, you know, throw their hands up and say, hey, look, you know, I'm completely against this kind of stuff. No, you're fucking not. Because, like, you excuse the banner at Pataudry about, you know, Morales' mother. Like, you've let all this stuff go, and you've treated him. You see it, and that you specific. I mean, please comment. But like the way they don't talk about Scott Brown the way they talk about Alfredo Morales.
That's the game, Shane. That is the game. At the heart of the matter, at the heart of all of it, when it comes down to it, is the existential struggle, as they see it and interpret it, between Rangers and Celtic. And they orientate everything around that based on the desire for clicks, notoriety, followers, likes, shares. And like you said, we'll get into Michael Stewart, but the reason that...
Every time I hear his name, I fucking laugh.
Well, Kamara's a problem because Kamara's wearing a Rangers jersey, and Michael Stewart over the years has orientated himself from that perspective. And so when we get a human issue that's bigger than football, he has to, I think, explore live on a mic what that actually means and sounds like, which is a big risk. He took the risk, and I'll say this in fairness, there were one or two things he did say that are valid. However, they weren't the time to talk about them, definitely not. And I think that he stumbled on that because it was, once again, it was a Rangers player. And you pointed out the stuff around Morelos. I mean, the time for that conversation was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But it wasn't seized upon. That's wrong. Yeah, it's wrong.
Yeah, the thing with Stewart in this, you know, I mean, let's touch on our profession. You know, I spent nearly 15 years as a journalist. I don't do it anymore, but it never leaves you. Typically before you open your fucking mouth, you try to find out what the fuck it is you're talking about. And you know, as you said right there about Stewart, it's like we get to watch him live on mic try to work through these fucking problems. He hasn't bothered. It's like there's always only two outcomes of that. One, it's deliberate, or two, it's ignorance. And neither is excusable as someone playing the point of, you know, the educated footballer for the BBC Scotland.
Do you know, part of the problem...
He's supposed to be the smart one, you know?
Yeah, part of the problem with racism, and this will go back to Kadela and Slavia Prague, and it's a sense of self-delusion and dishonesty for me.
Right.
For me, Michael Stewart in that situation would have been far better off saying, look, I don't know enough about this subject to speak on it. I know you're asking me, but it's incendiary, and I think I need to maybe go and do some more reading or learn some more about it, rather than bumble his way through it, then come out the other side and try to double down on it. Like, the reference I made to Slavia Prague is, if you look at the way that Slavia are dealing with it, they're essentially not being honest. I mean, let's face it, they're being dishonest. So if that's a club value or a business value of their corporate brand or their deep cultural roots to have this dishonesty and double down, then what sort of business are they when they're faced with a real business issue that has elements of values attached to it? Do they look in the mirror and go, do you know, we might have screwed up in a business sense. We need to realign our strategy or reinvent a strategy. They might not do that. They might just double down. And that's why they're only recently very successful. And I think when it comes to that value, somewhere down the track, that will come back and get you. And again, to me, that's the insidious nature of racism itself, is that it causes us to be dishonest and self-delusional in a certain way. And for me, yeah, like, I'll be honest, and it's probably be an unpopular take, but there were things that Michael Stewart said that I thought, okay, that drives the conversation along, but perhaps you shouldn't have said it. And it's for much later. It could be for me that, yes, we have to wait for judicial process, whether it's going to be flawed or not, or as the manager says, as Stephen Jarrett said, you know, it won't look like what we want it to look like. It's still a truism. Right. We still have to wait for that. And then the second thing is that came up was around this idea of, well, we have to hear it from Cadella's side. Well, see, that for me, again, is also in the sense of legal reasoning is true, but it's also wrong. For me, it put Glenn Kamara in this position of not being heard at all. And that was troubling for me. And I just felt that Michael Stewart got tangled up, and it would have been far better to just step away from the mic and just go, do you know what? This is big and I can't answer it at this particular moment, you know. But he's doubled down on it. He's now in a very awkward position.
To what you're saying, I think you see that often with people. It's similar positions. I know that, you know, I've seen over here in media and print, TV, radio, whatever, all the time. You have racists, right? You have guys like Sean Hannity or Tucker Carlson or Rush Limbaugh, who thank God he's dead, over here, that are just overtly pushing that mindset. But then you have, like you said, the people like Stewart who take a fucking minute, right? Take a minute, talk to someone, further understand the problem. Don't just come out and start just hashing this shit out live on air in your own. Like, I mean, it's like an internal monologue in his fucking head about, well, did he do a racism? Maybe. Is doing a racism bad? Probably. Should, you know, like, no, that's not the response to this. And you know, one thing I still don't understand, like, where the fuck is, right? Where's the SPFL? Where's the SFA? Where's the Players Union? Why have they not said a fucking word?
Well, you and I as journalists and you know, for me as a comms practitioner, the only reason I can see for a lengthy delay is that they're taking their good sweet time to make a considered response. I've been in that position myself, leading comms for football organizations. So I understand that side of it. However, when you look at what the English FA have done in terms of their quick response, you start to wonder whether or not it's a case of something being well prepared, or there isn't a position yet because the subject again is too big. I mean, we've just criticized Michael Stewart for maybe not taking his time. Rangers took their time over the recent SFA report, and it was a good move. It turned out to be in the end, I think. But, I mean, the inner workings of the SPFL and the SFA seem to be deeply flawed from what we can see on this matter. Yeah. You know, but our relationship with the SFA.
Well, I mean, they're relatively deeply flawed and deeply flawed in communications in general. So I guess we can't be that, you know, amazed. That maybe they're not on the ball here. You know, but like from me personally, right? I mean, I was look, I'm a white guy in America. It's like the easiest gig in the fucking world. I'm not gonna lie, you know. But I've always been cognizant of this. You know, my mom raised me to fucking be right, because her folks are from Mississippi. I mean, like Jim Crow, fucking Mississippi. They're racist as hell, and You know, you do that thing because you're, oh, they're old. No, well, no, I remember one time I was out visiting my mom's parents, and a new black family moved in across the street, right? And dad was a doctor, and mom was a lawyer, and my grandma went out of the way to tell me that they weren't the uppity sort of, you know. Yeah. And it's no, like, you can't say that. Like, it's, you know, me and David, maybe David not as much because he tends to hedge, somewhat hedge his opinions on this kind of stuff, or maybe do better at making a joke out of him than I do. I tend to just tell people to fuck off. but last summer, you know, with everything that was going on here in America, like a lot of the same people that I'm seeing that maybe had their eyes opened since Thursday are the same fuckers that I was getting emails or DMs or Twitter messages from. So stop talking about this. Why are you talking about it? You know, from the output of the George Floyd murder and what transpired over here in the summer. It's like, you're going to sit here and preach to me about what's going on in my country. Right? Mm. I mean, like, Rockford is a horribly racist town. I'm not even going to try to fucking hide it. Like, the school district here got sued by the Justice Department back in the early 90s for $280 million for segregating the school districts. I mean, it's still a very real issue in this town. And I hated when I was trying to have these conversations on the pod that people, instead of listening, the way I know is because I go out in the community and I listen to them, and here's me trying to relay that to you. You know, and I have seen some of those people now in the fallout from the Kamara thing actually be like, shit, you know, this is still a fucking thing, right? Mm. And no one should go to work having to think about, hey, am I going to be fucking racially abused by a colleague? You know, not a colleague in the sense that he works for me, but a colleague in a professional sense. Before I come home to my wife and kids, you know, like that's fucking crazy.
Well, look, I mean, you're relating your experience with racism in your town, your country, and you know, my experience of racism in football from an Australasian perspective. You know, I played to a good level, semi-professional level in Australia, New Zealand, and England, and you know, I came across racism at grounds in Australia and New Zealand on a regular basis, and the way that I tended to deal with it as a teenager and then in my early 20s was to, you know, I would just close myself down to it, get on with playing and try my best. And then I'd go away from a game, and if we'd lost, I'd feel flat for that. But if I'd experienced racism from the crowd, you know, it would make me feel despondent even more, you know, because I would have to try and find a way to build myself back up. But as I got older and I experienced it a lot more, my philosophy changed. You know, my attitude to that became very, very different. And I would take the fight to the game itself, on the pitch I was, you know, playing on. And that could look a lot of different ways. I played against a Japanese guy, against a local club here who were giving me a lot of stick. And I went right through this guy. He was a good player, very good player on the ball, technical, quick. And I went right through him right in front of the main stand. he rolled over a couple of times, and then they got stuck into me. And then I gave something back. I said something along the lines of, you know, if you keep going, the second time I get him, it's going to be your fault. And then I went through him again, and he got taken off, you know. But I was getting older and a bit more mature, and I could handle it, and I had a thicker skin for it. So I started to play the game very differently. But I encountered it regularly, even in administration. You know, this is the first time I've said this out loud, but an organization I worked for in football here in New Zealand, I laid two complaints for racism in the office and one for workplace bullying, and only because the workplace bullying aspect was a repositioning of the abuse by whoever was perpetrating it, and they used anonymity to achieve it, which is quite shocking to say. I left the organization by choice March 2018. And I suppose what I'm saying through these experiences is that racism in New Zealand in particular is very quietly dispensed. It's culturally, New Zealand is similar perhaps to certain parts of England. That's kind of the culture you have. And Australia has probably got more in common with America and maybe slices of white South Africa in the way that racism is meted out. It's very much in your face. You see it coming, and it can be quite heated, open conflict. In New Zealand, people kind of hide it because it's just a little bit awkward. So you walk into a shop.
I mean, that really is kind of, you know, like there's Southern racism here in the U.S. And then, I mean, I've said for it, Midwest racism is a totally different thing. Because, you know, the Midwest wasn't part of the Confederacy. It wasn't part of Jim Crow. It wasn't, but there was still redlining. You know, there were still busing kids to schools to keep them out of there. So, I mean, you didn't do it out in the open, but it was still there. You know, I mean, it's still there. You can call it whatever the fuck you want. It is what it is.
Yeah, totally, totally. It's quite strange because if I think of our national team qualifying for the World Cup in 1982 to play Scotland, Brazil and the USSR, the bulk of the team, 15 of the 22 players in that squad, I think, were born in the UK. And we had one Maori player, Polynesian player. His father was Swiss, his mother's Maori. Winton Rufer, who went on to play in the Bundesliga for Werder Bremen, probably our greatest player of all time. Scored the winning goal in the Cup Winners' Cup final. He was the only Maori player. Now we have, well, the last time the national team reconvened, which is a couple of years ago now because of COVID and such, the vast majority of the team now are of Polynesian descent, or very similar to myself, a European parent and a locally born parent of either European or Polynesian ancestry. So the culture within that national team environment has had to change because there was some assumed mores and practices about operational matters, about cultural matters that were just simply assumed. And they've now had to adapt and change, but it can be problematic. It can be deeply problematic. Yeah. You know, and it's an ongoing issue that's currently on hold here. I think until we get back to playing matches, you know, we're Pacific Islands surrounded by 15 other Pacific Islands that we can't travel to, you know. So we've got this wonderful paradise where we can't go anywhere. I shouldn't complain given what people are going through in Scotland, but it can be frustrating. At least you're playing a lot.
I feel so bad like telling them I went to the pub. Like, yeah. You know, sorry.
Yeah. I apologize for that too. We had a great time last night at the Paddington. in our droves, no masks. It was just, you take it for granted. You honestly, you take it for granted. We've had a couple of lockdowns in the last couple of weeks.
You do. There was something you said there too. And like, I think this kind of ties back to Stuart. I think this kind of ties back to people's reactions to this kind of stuff. And I mean, it wasn't racial abuse, but I was at club level. At least through like my mid to late 20s, obviously not at a high level as you, because club level over here doesn't mean the same fucking thing. But yeah, like we were in the US Open, we played, and I still remember one match in which there was a guy with a openly gay, our number nine, you know, I mean, he was you know, it's one of those ones that you just know. And James, I mean, he was a doctor, like fucking nicest goddamn guy in the world. But he was openly gay and didn't fucking mind talking about it or anything else. And we were playing a match, and this motherfucker was going at him on purpose, you know, coming in over the ball, coming in two-footed, coming in while like everything else. And I found, like, I pulled him aside. I was like, "You do it again, I'm gonna fucking roll." You know, and it happened, and I broke his ankle, and I got, you know, I got my card. I didn't even get sent off. Like, I mean, I went through and, like, you know, did the where you're dragging the hook on the tail leg, and then just kind of like rolled over to stand up. And I mean, fucking snap. But I didn't feel bad about it at all. And I think, you know, to like what the players did Thursday night, allegedly. what the Flyers did Thursday night, allegedly. I don't feel one fucking bit bad for kind of direct retribution. I'm glad, again, allegedly, Glenn got his hands on that motherfucker. And because obviously, again, I mean, you could see it on the park, but you could see it when Gerard, and I'll tell you what, this is still a fucking masterclass in what he did. When he went out to talk to their first team staff, and at first they were kind of out near the center of the pitch, you know. And then he dragged them, like, slowly. You could see him, like, got them back over right in front of the skybox. So that you could see, like, their body language versus his and what was going on. And again, you know, in the meantime, the squad was back there down in the tunnel doing fuck it. Like, they're not coming. We know they can only come in that way, you know.
Shane, you used the word masterclass, and it was a complete masterclass. And it gets back to what I was talking about, you know, when it comes to values, like Slavia Prague's explicit and implied values contain a level of dishonesty and deception, which might be culturally acceptable to them. Steven Gerrard, final whistle, in the middle of the pitch, talked to their player, Kudel, one of Slavia's other players who was in close proximity to the event, a brief word to their coach, right bang in front of the pitch camera. And then, as you said, when it reconvened on the sideline, Gerrard again engaged half a dozen of them all at once with some support from our club. And what are the values there? Honesty, transparency, directness. You know, these are the values that, you know, of light triumphing over evil, if you like. And I think that's why it's resonated so deeply with supporters, not just at Rangers, but at a lot of other clubs. You know, we've come through the looking glass with what happened on Twitter with, you know, other clubs in the SPFL getting in behind Glenn Kamara. It's taken something as bizarre and awful as that to find some sort of pattern of unity, even if it's only for a moment. Maybe we only need it for this moment for it to then grow in other areas. But for me, it's that value system, and our manager, our chairman, you know, a director of football.
Dougie Park being right down there, right behind Gerrard on the pitch, you know. Like, no, he, I mean, he represents everything. Whatever the fuck he's saying is what represents our football club right now. Yeah. You know, I mean, when you have the chairman standing right there behind you.
Yeah, totally. I was so proud. You know, I've shown, like, a lot of my mates here, they treat my love of Rangers with, you know, that's a really quirky thing about Gordon. But, you know, I boast about the way that we've handled this because it's a blueprint for football organizations. And I'm not saying that our club's perfect. I'm not saying that, you know, we're the leading light, you know, we haven't done things wrong in the past. That's not important. That's not the important part. The important part is that for this one moment in time, we got it right. And what I appreciate, and this is me speaking as a person, you know, from two mixed race parentage, is that I appreciate how difficult it can be for, and I don't even like using the word white people, European people, whatever you have, however one wants to recognize oneself.
It's all right. I'll let you go ahead. Go.
okay, it's all good. No, but I appreciate how difficult that can be to go out on a limb and try and navigate it carefully. You know, a friend of mine the other day made a remark about the subject and then apologized for having an opinion. And I laughed out loud and I put my hand on his shoulder and gave it a pat. And I said, you do know you are allowed an opinion. You know, like, you can't express it. You are allowed to do that. But I understood where he was coming from. You know, like, he was trying to be careful. But I appreciated that and I had empathy for that and I understood that and I wanted to nurture that and show him that he had my respect and that, you know, we're equals. We can talk about difficult things together. And I think that, you know, that's maybe the next step in this process. we need to be really hard on it. Racism is a evil to be fought, but at the same time, we also need an element of empathy and gentleness, you know, which don't necessarily belong in the football environment. You know, it's right. All about conflict and winning and achievement and aspiration. But at the same time, our values underpinning some of those things, you know, empathy and consideration and vulnerability can be quite powerful devices, you know, to help growth, which is why I think the future for Slavia is not necessarily that good, because they seem to misuse those assets. And, you know, eventually somewhere down the track, it comes back to bite you in the neck.
It's a thing too with Slavia, right? Like, I mean, this is a club that we should, you know, you're talking about empathy. I mean, this is a club that we should be able to empathize with, right? Because they were, us, you know. I mean, they were the top fucking shot, and then they had a shoddy ass fucking ownership group, and a shit ton of stuff happened, and then they finally got back together, and they're fine. But instead of that, you know, like I said, we throw back to 2019, whether it was Lukaku and Semedo, you know, in that shady group where their fans were racially abusing these players. And then as they this is the thing, and we've seen it this week, right? I mean, the denial and deflection is me and you about the coordinated, multifaceted disinformation campaign. In 2019, they demanded that Lukaku apologize for saying that he'd been racially abused by their fans in singing when it was, I mean, it was clear as day during the fuck, you know, I mean, everyone could hear it. But their stance as a club was to, you know, close circle and batten down the hatches and fuck it. We're not fucking racist. You guys are the fuck. You know, it's like it's come up over and over again. But, you know, like the there's that Lemmy bit that's, you know, double dune. You know, like, you weren't fucking there. You weren't fucking. You don't. I mean, it's there, and it's the same like this week. You know, Stewart doing his bullshit, fine, whatever. The guy's a fucking idiot. I mean, we all fucking know that. But, like, no one walks over to a man in that kind of situation and puts their hand over their mouth to lean in and say something that, hey, you're a. Dude, you're a fucking guy. You know, like, it's not a scene out of fucking Friends. The guy went in to say something that you're not supposed to say.
Oh, shit. Shane, it takes a hell of a lot. It takes a hell of a lot to unify Scottish people with one perspective. And I think, like, there's a, like, and this is speaking as a foreign-born Scot, if I can say it that way, for now, is when that happened and he covered his mouth and then he ran away because he ran away, right?
Yeah.
And then later,
oh, Jenna, later, you're gone.
Reached for a Glasgow cop, right, to help him out.
No, he was like a Klansman riding away on his fucking horse, man. Like, that motherfucker was out.
yeah. But it takes a lot to unify Scottish people. They disagree on just about anything, and sometimes just for the hell of it, right? So I think for me, what probably got to most people in a general sense is the sheer cowardice adopted. My father, my late father, used to say to me, you know, like, he liked football and he loved football and he liked and admired rugby league. And I used to say, well, why do you like rugby league but not rugby union? He said, well, in rugby league, if someone's going to bash you, he said, you see it coming front on. He said, in football, you can see it generally coming in front on. He said, but in rugby union, you can be lying at the bottom of a scrum getting a kicking. And he said, I've got no time for that type of sneakiness. so for me, when I saw him do that, I thought, that's not going to go down well with anybody in Scotland, because most, for the most part, they'll look at it as the sneakiest, most low approach. And then you throw the, you know, the, obviously the racism, alleged racism in on top of it, and then Glenn Kamara's response, and then everything the way it unfolded. Yeah, I think it was just like the cowardice of it. I mean, and the manager said in the post-match to Emma Dodd, you know, if you're going to say something to me, I'm not going to cover my mouth. And he said, if I say something to you, I'm just going to say it. I'm not going to cover my mouth, and then we'll sort it out. And that's how most people operate, you know, in our culture. Yep. In their culture, it's a different. Obviously, it's different. He might be getting a lot of pats on the back, and they have to tell a whole load of lies around it to make it seem awesomely brave. And yeah, I know the national team's fallen out of vogue with the Rangers support, and I totally understand why. I'm of the old school variety where it was still safe to, you know, be a Rangers and a Scotland fan. That's become less of a thing for me. But I sense that when Scotland play the Czech Republic, there may be a 24-hour period where there'll be some 1978-style expectations applied
I think all of us sat there like, all right, the Champions League group, like, or the qualifiers, whatever the fuck it is, I did love, you know, toward the end of last Thursday. Because, I mean, the match was on, like, at a decent time for me, which was nice. I think it kicked off at 3. The result was shit, and then everything that happened afterward was shit. But it put me, like, in a good time frame, you know. Again, as a journalist, we do our best work probably between, like, 6 p.m. and 11, you know. I was sitting here doing this shit, and I found I could not fucking believe it. Because I was going back through trying to find all this shit. There's a research paper about Slavia Prague fans from 2017 in which, now the way, again, this is how you take stuff. Race, quote, right? Racism was regarded by more than half of fans, 58.87%, who found expressions against dark-skinned players a very serious problem. So you can go, all right, 59% of their supporters thought that that's a bad thing. I go, well, 41% don't. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the story with this club over the past few years. Mm-hmm. And I the saddest part for me is going back, you know, to Michael Stewart or whoever, any of these fuckers who haven't said anything remotely on balance. I think Stuart Weir might be the only one. Well, Stephen McGowan, who I thought wrote a pretty good column with his closing paragraph, basically, I'm glad Connor Goldson kicked the shit out of some people in the hallway. but all these guys who haven't fucking said shit, like, you're that 41%, you know? Mm. If you're not there and you're not holding the line against this, you're part of it. And I think I hope that that's the lesson a lot of people are taking out of what's going on in the past, you know, 4 or 5 days now.
I totally agree. I think one of the other elements here that we probably haven't touched on and disentangled yet, attached to what you're saying, is that, you know, the difference between East and West. You know, when we were growing up through the Cold War, communist arguments were always of this idea that there was no racism in the Soviet Union, and that, in fact, reaching out to Africa and, you know, parts of Asia were evidence of this sort of utopian version of race relations.
And we want their oil, therefore we can't be racist.
Exactly. And so I think like I first went to Russia to work in the Confederations Cup in 2017 as a press officer, and the first night I arrived in St. Petersburg, I was slightly late getting to the hotel, and it was a long, long, long way to go. And there was a dinner with my colleagues, and I thought, well, I'll throw the bags on the bed, and then I'll just shoot off and stay for an hour. I walked to the restaurant, fine, a beautiful city, had dinner, thought, well, I'll go home. I'm really jet lagged. Walking home, Russian guy walked past me, spat, not at me, but by me, very deliberately.
Yeah.
Displeased with my appearance on the street. And yeah, he looked pretty handy too. And I just ignored it and kept walking. You know, like to me, it was a disappointing moment. But the experience that I then went on to have at the tournament itself, working with Russians, was so good. And I found, I think David touched on this when he talked in one of, I don't know if it was a History Boys podcast with Martin, but I found that working with Russian people, that you could split them between those who grew up in communism just around the middle age and then those underneath who hadn't. And it was the young people underneath who I found to be so inspiring. A lot of them multilingual, a lot of them really well traveled, really well spoken on popular culture in the West, politically aware of shortcomings in their country, things of the West that they like and don't like. And I was blown away by it. Equally, I was blown away by how staunch the mostly men of middle age who had experienced the Soviet Union, how staunch they were. And, you know, you use Lemmy, you know, don't back down, double down. Well, yeah, wow, I mean, a lot of them do. But there was a lot of respect as well. And I could see that emerging through the World Cup in Russia. I was in St. Petersburg. I ran media operations at the Zenit Stadium from the opening game to the third place match. And I left Russia with a very different view of how that, what their mentality was. I don't think I would ever truly get to know it unless I spoke Russian and went deeper into to their history, which of course is, you know, pretty grim. But I must say that I felt a lot of hope for them because of their young people. I tell you, I must say, while I remember, and we're on racism, that during the Confederations Cup in 2017, there was a game, I think it was in Sochi, Cameroon played, I can't remember who it was, showing signs of not having much sleep. but Cameroon played, and they played in Sochi, and a fan was removed from a stadium because he had blacked up.
And, well, fuck.
Right, he had blacked up. Now, the condemnation around this person was pretty intense because Russia was trying to get itself ready for the World Cup and it was really concerned about, you know, racism. Now,
image, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a terrible image, but when the guy was questioned...
meanwhile, down the street, they're kettling and beating the shit out of 400 gay men. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I mean, that's the paradox of Russia. And that was the thing. Whenever you go into those tournaments, if you're working in multi-sports events or single sports events for an organizing body, it is very much a Western bubble that is put into place in those countries. And so they do seek Russians who are able to navigate through those environments to ensure that the project gets delivered. But it's I'll tell you another strange thing. It's probably more along gender lines. We always do operational meetings every day at World Cups, and I remember, I think it was maybe a couple of weeks in, and I noticed that all the Russian women came in and shook everybody's hand, and our team's, you know, multinational, and then the Russian men would come in and they would shake everybody's hand, male, female, black, white, you know, blah blah blah, no issue. But the Russian men didn't shake the hands of the Russian women. And my 2IC was a Russian woman. And we came out of this meeting and I'd observed it but hadn't articulated it. I felt it. And then I got the impression she was really shitty. And I said to her, I said, look, is everything all right? And she goes, no, I'm really angry. She said, that guy, Anatoly, has said this thing about me not being good enough to do it. And I'm more than good enough. And I said to her, I clicked my fingers and I said, they don't shake your hands. And she said to me, well, no, why would they? And I said, well, they shake everybody else's hands, including women of color from different countries, different languages. And she goes, yeah, but they have to. She said, they don't have to shake our hands. I said, you know, when the circus tent leaves and it gets pulled down, you know, we go back to being how we are. And, you know, I was like, well, I knew that already, but I've been in this bubble where we're trying to deliver a really complicated project together, and we have to cooperate. So for that moment, you know, you forget. But again, that's Eastern Europe, I guess. And what we're seeing of the Slavia Prague example is this horrible, ugly yeah. side to it. You know, the doubling down, the lying, the deceit, the cultural veneration of it. And look, you mentioned it before, sorry to keep going on, but we haven't seen the last of Slavia Prague, I don't think. I think they're in the mix somewhere down the track.
That's the way that goes. You know, we haven't seen him since 1904, and now we're going to see him like four times in the next six years. I remember, I did, you know, box work with MLS. You know, go in, you do your fucking match reports, you get the little lunch, you do fucking whatever. So the Chicago Fire went through the souls, you know, this kind of crosses a bunch of lines. They had their like chief media officer guy, you know, the guy that meets you in the press box, you know, the motherfucker. Tells you where to sit. Hey, you know, we changed the coffee this week. Fucking with, oh, here's your team sheets, blah, 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 blah. By the way, if you actually need something, don't ask me, ask someone else, you know. So he famously, you guys can go look this fucking letter up, like signed off and published. I think it was on a Sunday night. I mean, it was every part of veiled racist, sexist, fucking horrible bullshit that you would expect coming out of MLS that somebody in the ownership group had written. But he ultimately was the one who decided to put it on the fucking website. And I'm not gonna ram him too hard. I'm not even gonna give his name because he's left the industry. I think he's working in video games now or something because he felt really fucking shitty about how it worked.
Yeah,
they replaced him with a young woman. I think she was from South Korea, or her family was from South Korea, and the shift in the box, you know, up in the fucking press box from the 20 of us up there, like the way that they thought they could fucking talk to her, that they would never say to fucking Tony, you know, like there is no way fuck this shit would fly. I mean, you know, like you're saying with the Russia, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Maybe they shook her hand. But then I never understood the way some of these guys would fucking treat her. Because, I mean, she's in the same fucking job. And would you let someone talk to your sister like that? You know, I don't know. I do. Because I talked to a couple of them out in the parking lot after games sometimes. It was exacerbated because she was Asian and not, you know, a white American. But it was like, what in the fuck is your problem? Like, she's a professional. She's here doing her fucking job to make your job easier, right? She's here specifically to make sure that our rice pilaf and chicken is done at halftime so that we can have fucking lunch.
Yeah, man.
Like, God damn it. Show her some fucking respect.
Yeah, as a press officer myself, I enjoy those confrontations with ignorant people. The last World Cup, I removed five journalists from the tournament, including one who got booted out of the tournament the day he arrived. So I was doing a press conference. I can't remember which team. It might have been Morocco playing. It was definitely Morocco I was with. And the press conference room is packed. I'm with the coach and the player and their press officer. And at the back of the room where all the TV cameras are, I noticed this guy come in the back entrance late. He's 20 minutes late. We're 20 minutes in and it's 10 minutes away from breaking to go to training. And at the back of the room, my Russian 2IC, who I mentioned before, she's trying to seat the guy and he pushed her. I saw him do it. And I thought, right, when we go into the Stadium Bowl and he goes to the media tribune, I'm going to peel him out. And we go in there, and then he comes in. You know, the team's out there for the 1 hour and 30 minutes, and the press have got their 15 minutes. And I walked up to him, and I said, you know, who are you? What's your organization? And he identified himself, but in French. And I said, okay. I said, I saw you lay hands on that media volunteer during the press conference. I saw you push her. And I said, you're not allowed to do that here. I said, number one, it's actually a Russian local matter. And I said, number two, that's a breach of your accreditation. And he kept speaking in French. And I said, oh, that's okay. Yeah. I can speak a little French. And then he started yelling, and all the television cameras that were pointed at the pitch suddenly got turned around to where we were standing, and I became very conscious of that. So I asked security to take him out. We took him to the media center and basically removed the accreditation, and he suddenly could speak English. But you get that toxic masculinity, you know, like it comes from all, because
it's everywhere in every press box. It doesn't fucking matter.
That's the struggle we're up against. And you know, to get back to Glenn Kamara, I've been really, really encouraged, deeply encouraged by the way that the Rangers support and, you know, Scotland generally has responded to it. I think it's been really, really good.
All right, Gordon, you get the questions. You get the Crow Pod questions for the first time in your life. Are you ready? Boom. Are you ready?
Let's go. Let's have it.
All right. We'll start with the big one here. Gareth wants to know, do you consider your season at Bradford your finest in England?
Oh, well, it's thank you for the question.
he's a good guy. He actually says, Bradford question says, which embarrassed you more from Stewart's media output, the before COVID news statement or the rolling back after, you know, his full on I'm the victim now kind of a thing?
Well, I think the I'm the victim thing tells you and informs you more about the sincerity of the first thing he said. And you might recall at the beginning of our chat, I felt that, you know, he was processing through it in the first instance and gave the benefit of the doubt because you're trying to search for, you know, a bit of truth. But the second part was doubling down, and we just sort of spent a good bulk of this podcast talking about doubling down on hardcore positions. I think he's chosen a Slavia tactic to deal with it, so I don't approve.
Double fucking doom. sick.
Stick by the way.
Yeah.
I'm definitely a Lemmy fan. Ross I'm definitely wants... Burniston as well, by the way. I think they're fantastic.
I might play that as the outro to this episode because I think people need to hear it.
I think I need to hear it, yeah.
Ross Bence wants to know, assuming as I do that UEFA will gloss over all this, I still expect we're going to get like a 20,000 pound fine and they're going to get about $5,000 and then, you know, nothing else will happen. But he wants to, what's the worst example of ignored racism you've witnessed in your journalism?
Ooh. Well, I think I covered a couple in this podcast, you know. If I think of another incident that occurred about 11 years, well, it was on
I've covered my fair share of black men being shot in the back by police who hadn't actually fucking done anything. So, yeah. And you know, just to clarify, like, I don't think I've talked about this in any crowbars. The reason I don't do it anymore is because I kind of lost track of the dead bodies I'm seeing. And that's not something that you really ever get trained for. You know, we're not fucking EMTs or, you know, like first responders, whatever the hell you guys want to call them. And obviously, I've seen enough. And I will say this. Usually the handgun victims are the clean ones. It's the guys who get lit up by like somebody with a 223, like a, what are they calling, like the AR-15, those rifles that Americans love to carry and then, you know, shoot school children in the face with.
Can I give you some advice, guys, Shane? Just sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, don't go back.
Gun laws. New Zealand. We're in a troubled position as well, having, you know, obviously Christchurch, and I knew somebody who passed away in that slaughter. But yeah, I mean, the things that you see from externally, you know, to the United States is a different level altogether. We're sort of like the UK in that regard. We don't have, everybody doesn't have a gun. We don't open carry, neither do the cops.
I live in the west side of town, which is, you know, the more violent side of town. If you ask the east side of town, it's the black side of town. It's like, no, it's not the black side of town. It's the poorer side of town, because you guys, you know, again, segregated the schools, cut off public transport. there's literally this whole side of town, 65,000 people live out here. There's two grocery stores, right? For 65 fucking thousand people on this side of town. So no, it's hard. It's hard seeing it in every day, the way I do, you know. And again, I mean, I'm saying this. I'm a white male in America. It's the easiest shift that you could ever get in the fucking universe, right? I mean, there is so little that you can do to actually fuck up your life. But I'm here and side by side, like, and it's fucking crazy, this shit. You know, Ross here asking us about ignored racism. Like, I can't count the number of community groups or engagement groups or fucking, I mean, you know, all the PR bullshit that cities or towns try to do. Like, we're going to be top 20 by fucking 20. No, you're not, because you're not. You're spending money on this shit, right? Like, I went through the budget, like a line item budget on a group here in town. It was called Transform Rockford. They spent in 1 year $4.2 million on this kind of, you know, research studies. And it was like, you could have added 14 bus lines and ran them 24 hours a day. That would improve people's lives. What you did was publish reports saying how we should improve their fucking, like, action. Don't sit there and tell yourselves what you should do. Just do it.
Wow, man. Like, I was gonna say, you know, like, that what you've just said is just something I can't relate to, you know, having to cover murders you know, like, you joke to get your way through those things as a journalist. Like, in my early years in print, as a junior, I would often get car accidents and coroner's courts and fucking hell, man. Like, I didn't say
car accidents are fucked. God. I'll tell you, for it was like blunt force, again, the people who die from handgun wounds, like, those are usually clean. The rifle's bad. Car crash victims, or in my case, tornado victims, are fucking awful. Like, just imagine every color of blue and purple and black that you've ever seen in your life, and then like puddles of blood trickling out of that, because that's what those scenes are. I mean, all right, that was a fun question. Thanks, Ross Bentz. That really lightened the mood. God. Yuma wants to know, I think this is one of the important questions here. What could force UEFA to actually stamp this? I think if Glenn walked off, I think it would have really raised, I don't know how much higher you can raise a red flag than what the fuck actually happened and what has transpired since. UEFA will only ever give a fuck when their wallet is under question.
Well, yeah, and I think that's a good starting point because, well, to take the first part, should Glenn Kamara and team walked off the pitch, I don't necessarily think so. I have to answer that from my own personal view. If I was good enough to be playing in that game in the first place, would I walk off? My instinct is no, carry the fight to everyone, but that's just how I'm built. I didn't play in front of crowds of, 10, 50,000, and Lukaku has. Other players have walked off, but what's changed? Nothing. And I think that's why when you hit people in the wallet and you change who you shop with, who you consume from, then it captures the attention of people in the confederations to maybe make those changes. But how do you do that? You know, like, this is the thing. It's a big question. And who does it? Is it the clubs? Yeah. Well, part of the governance issue there, and we've seen it in the SPFL in the last couple of years, is it's a members' organisation and everything runs to the pace of what makes the most money. Connor Goldson said it really well and really clearly. We can't wear certain branded gear, and that's a big deal, and you get fined for it. But racism, well, it doesn't matter. Well, until you do make it matter, and this is maybe why PFAs and such are really important in this debate, until they get around the table with the players and there's some sort of unified approach, then I fear you're right, Shane. Like, someone's going to cop a fine. It could be us. Cadella and Kamara will get an equal punishment, so to speak, and then the circus rolls on. And I think that's what it will require.
Yeah, offsetting penalties, I think, is... to borrow a term from the National Football League there. I think some of it has worked over here because obviously, again, going back to last and when the sports leagues finally came back to play, NFL players did and NBA players did. And Jesus Christ, like, when you have fucking LeBron James doing this kind of shit, like, that's when it fucking matters. When you have those kind of people saying, hey, I'll take my brand and fuck off, then you're dealing with one of the five biggest athletes in the fucking world. I mean, that's always what it is. None of this shit ever changes until somebody's got to pay for it, as a country over here, that's entirely what it's been steeped in, what, all of a sudden, Whitey's got to pay the bills? Oh, fuck, we've already changed the laws. I mean, that's all it ever has been. I don't know how to do that. I don't, said, we're talking about clothing, like, Nicholas Bentner got fined 100,000 euros for wearing the wrong fucking underwear. Slavia Prague got fined 20,000 euros for their fans racially abusing a player at the San Siro. So there you go. That's how it works. The important question here, all right, the very important question, comes from our man Fraser. If you could have a fight with any TV celebrity chef, who would it be and why?
I thought about this because I caught a glimpse of it on Twitter. So I came up with two options. I don't watch much reality.
You like every other crow powder ever. You're like, hold on, all the good questions I'm going to skip. This fucking thing right here. This thing is the thing I thought about.
I'm still a man child. I'm still a man child at heart. So I saw this and I thought, well, the first name that came into my head was Julia Childs. And I thought, well, I can say that for the last.
She's dead.
But she's dead is one problem. And secondly, were she alive and I had chosen Julia Childs for a fight, well, that's just not a fair fight unless it turned into a bake-off, in which case Julia Childs would kick my ass. I haven't baked anything in at least 2 decades.
Oh, mate. No, like, I try, like, you know, anybody follows me on Twitter, I'm good, like, cooking meat. I'm good on the grill. I tried to bake a cake the other day. The results were poor. Very, very poor.
So you would take the fight to Julia on the grill?
No. Hey, outside of my back porch, on my kettle, I got that French bitch. Fuck her.
Well, I thought Gordon Ramsay might be fun for the simple fact that he's one of us.
Yeah, and you could throw hands, you have a little Rammy, and then go get a drink.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. We could swear on equal terms. You know, the patter would be, you know, electric. And we could probably sit down and talk about Rangers at the end of it. Who's that one? Now I'm showing my age and fatigue here, but the Jamie Oliver.
I think
people are fishing for that one.
Yeah, the school lunch guy. Yeah.
Yeah. If you would want me to fight Jamie Oliver, I'd be happy to oblige.
See, I think I would take I forget her name, like Giada De Laurentiis. I think is that sounds right. I don't know. My French is gone now. Giada De Laurentiis. That sounds right. Giada.
We go with that.
That sounds right. Fuck it. Go look her up. I wouldn't mind rolling with her for like 6 to 12 rounds.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it was never like I'd never want to fucking punch any of these guys in the face, except for maybe like Wolfgang Puck. Well, actually, you know what? Hey, on the topic of the show, Paula Deen is a racist fucking cunt. So
right,
fuck that fat ass bitch. And also, her biscuits and gravy is some of the worst shit I've ever seen in my fucking life. So.
Doesn't there sound very appetizing. No, definitely not.
Hey, hold on, Gordon.
Right.
Make you mine. It's good. That bitch can't fuck. Like, if you want to pretend to be Southern, you go right on. But don't fucking get on my television and tell me how to cook fucking fried chicken. It just ain't gonna happen.
Oh, dear.
Oh, man. All right, the last big question here, and I think we can wrap this one up. Our man, he's going by a Simple Bear, a good man with a Glenn Kamara avatar right now, like everybody else on my timeline, so I have no idea who the fuck's who anymore. Mm-hmm. how do you both think things in regards to racial prejudice have changed in your respective countries over the last couple decades, if at all?
Well, you go first.
I mean, honestly, it's gotten worse. I'm not even gonna. Anybody who's listened to these shows over the years, going all the way back to 2012 and all the way up through, you know, this reincarnation now with David, it's gotten worse. It has. And a big part of it, you know, I know our friends over there in the UK, Brexit. Look, if you want to talk about Brexit, you want to talk about Scottish independence, you want to talk about whatever, it's still nationalist, idealist politics, right? It's identity politics, which never work out well for fucking anyone. Mm-hmm. And obviously that infiltrated, you know, our system. I mean, the Republican Party here. go back to the mid 60s after the passing of the Civil Rights Act that just said, hey, remember all those laws we made in the 1860s to say like black people should be treated as people? Now we actually mean it, you know. So it took another 100 years for those kind of laws to be enacted, and the Republican Party's reaction was to completely rebrand and isolate themselves from any kind of anything that isn't, you know, as we call them over here, WASPs, you know, it's white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, or you know, our entire Supreme Court is filled with Catholics, which is a whole different story. Mm. But, this is a country built on slavery. It is. And you can't deny that. You can't walk around it. You can't do the thing. Well, slavery ended 160 years ago. Well, no, it fucking didn't. Right. I mean, indentured servitude as a matter of practice lasted in this country all the way up to the beginning of the Second World War. You know, like black men were held in chains in barns in the southern United States to work on plantations all the way up until the beginning of the Second World War. So it's never been that long. And the fact that blatantly open, virulent racists like Donald Trump could be elected as president should tell you that, no, I mean, things have not gotten better. Look, Ronald Reagan was a fucking racist. I hate to break it to all you guys who think he tore down the fucking Berlin Wall, but he did that on the backs of campaigning his way to the White House, just denigrating black people. And like, Ronald Reagan was the kind of guy that used a hard R, right? I mean, it was hard R, N-word kind of shit. So, no, it is kind of scary for me, you know, as our guy asked here. I mean, the past 10, 20 years, we're talking about my adult life. It's gone backwards at a very rapid pace because the people who are still in power, right, and I think this is the key thing, they are still in power, are reacting to the fact that they won't be, or their kids won't be, or their grandkids won't be. And so this reactionary style of politic has really driven what's going on here. And that's why seeing something like this, you know, with Kamara this week, it's like, fuck me. Every day, I see this every fucking day in my community. Every day.
From a New Zealand perspective, well, I have to give you the background of the country as well, but similar to the way you have. New Zealand became a country in 1840, and a treaty was signed between Maori people and the British. And from that point going forward, there was a slow disenfranchisement of, ownership of land and so forth that took place. And I think up until the 1970s, notions of racism and such were pervasive. But because of the nature of the country, the size of the country's obsession with rugby union, where people could, you know, pioneering Europeans could meet, you know, the warrior nature of Maori people as equals, and they could play the sport together as equals and be successful together as equals. It helped, certainly from the early part of the century, then especially through the 70s and to the present day, it's been a very useful tool for smoothing race relations. But race relations are still, to a certain extent, tense. And I think in our country, it's got more in common with Scotland in its scale. 5 million people. We've got a quote-unquote rockstar prime minister who's handled four major crises exceptionally well. But I think underneath that, if you scratch the surface, like anywhere, that appears to be, you know, she's the utopian centre-left sort of image of what a good leader should be, but she's really a centre-right politician. Underneath it,
I think that is like the blanket, you know, that's every, find me a Western country, like if people talk about like Kevin Trudeau, like he's this great leftist up there in Canada. No, he's fucking not. He's just like his dad. Yeah. I mean, the idea of what left is has moved, you know. They're all center right.
Well, this is, it's funny you say that, because when I listen to David and Martin talking in the History Boys a lot, and David says, you know, feels more centrist, and I feel more centrist, and I think it must be my age. But if you look at, you know, myself as a demographic, I used to be left, you know, quite left wing liberal. But now
I'm very left, as people will tell me.
But in terms of race relations, I think we got we have the same problems. We have issues of polarization. I think technology is playing a major role in the way that people are making decisions or processing their political thoughts. That has to be brought in line. And I think that, you know, what James Tavernier said about social media companies, they've got a lot to answer for. But like the situation with race and UEFA, is it going to happen? Well, only until someone puts pressure on their wallets. New Zealand's not a race relations utopia by any stretch of the imagination. But racism's very underground. You know, like it's the experience of walking into a shop finding that I walk out and I think, well, I don't feel very good. Why don't I feel good? Was it a look I got? Was it something I said?
There's a reason that even if they're most overt, right? Again, like going back to the Klan here, there's a reason that they do their business in the cover of dark. Mm. You know, they don't do the hard graft out in the open in the middle of the fucking day. They do it at 1 o'clock in the fucking morning. You know, it's not the racists aren't comfortable with being racist outside of being around other racists. You know, you don't see these people at work and that was the thing, you know, Slavia fans started putting that video around of Cadella going around like hugging his black teammates in the locker room. But that was their idea of positive messaging toward this, was to get all these accounts that they created, you know, on the drop on Thursday and Friday in the fallout of this, and tweet around this video of him walking in the locker room and giving his black teammate a hug. Like, that absolves him of being racist. No, that's not how this shit works. Racism doesn't exist out in the open. It manifests itself out in the open, but it doesn't exist out in the open.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's insipid and just pure evil, you know. And and look at the energy that's required to cover it up, like the sheer energy that's required to come up with the communications plan, the social media accounts, the bot swarm, the optics, the video. It's just own it,
guy did it. Everybody saw it. The guy did it. We sacked him. We just saved like whatever, 35 grand on our books, you know, like whatever. I don't know, man. I don't know. Yeah. It's tough. Well, I mean, obviously we haven't answered the racism question in these past 80 minutes, but hopefully, hopefully we've given everybody something to think about. So, Gordon, man, it's a pleasure to finally actually get on the fucking horn and have a dialogue and actually have it about something that means fucking something in this world instead of just the usual like dick jokes that we do on the Crow Pod.
It's been good, man. I've looked forward to it. I've enjoyed the banter, you know, on Twitter with the number Wang thing. You know, I don't know why that
again. You got the so second reference. I still don't have a number Wang reference. We can do like 4.44.
That's
number 4, one. 4.44. like I said, Gordon, of course, you can find him on Twitter. It's at Gordon_Watson. Or if you live down in that part of the fucking world, which is, I mean, like you're literally, if we see, this is always the thing. People are like, oh, I'm going to drill a hole and come out in China. I think if I drill a hole from here, I'd be like, well, I wouldn't be in New Zealand. I'd be somewhere in like Northern Australia or close to Papua New Guinea. I think is how that one works out. So, but he's down there. He's fucking down there. So,
yeah.
No, Gordon, thank you, man.
No, it's been a pleasure. And hope we can do it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I will be back with Todd and David on Tuesday for the regular Crow Pod. And I'm still trying to edit mine and Todd's conversations about Western films, because we recorded that 2 days after we won the league, and I was still like not even recovering from the bender. I was still fucking on the bender. So I'm trying to make it make sense. But that'll do. All right, Gordon, thank you, man. Love you, brother.
Pleasure. Take care.
And we'll talk to you Tuesday. See you.
Don't back down. Double down. If you show any weakness, if you apologize or try to explain yourself, they'll see it as weakness, they'll smell blood, and down you'll fucking go. Just go like that. Did I fuck? Start pointing and going like that. You weren't fucking there. You weren't there. You weren't fucking there. This is fucking sick, by the way. Sick.
Some people call me the space cowboy.